Welcome to the LaRue Show. This is Saturday, May 19, 2012. I'm Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic today is Argentina defies the British Empire. Argentina defends the nation-state system. And I'm very glad that we have two people from the South Atlantic who are leaders in the Americas. Speaking to us from Buenos Aires, we have Natalie Lovgren and Emiliano Rodino. Welcome, you two.
Hello, welcome. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you, Marcia.
Good. The connection sounds good. Now, as I said, both of them are in Buenos Aires. They are leaders of the LaRouche movement in the Americas. Natalie Lovgren, you may have seen on LPAC TV at different times. She's on an extended tour in Argentina, her home base being in the United States. She gets around. And Mr. Andino is speaking from his homeland. I'll say just for those of you who wish to do this, you may be listening live or later, you can seek them. You can see them on the website laruchista.com. No E in that, LaRouchista.com. And most recently, I just personally add that Natalie gave an on-the-ground report when earlier this month the parliament in Argentina approved the nationalization, or that is the of the oil energy company, YPF, and we may hear more about that, but she gave a first-hand report. I think there were fireworks. It was at night when the vote was passed. There was celebration, and there's great import to that. But first, I have a few things by way of introduction to say, and really it has to do with the fact that the moment in history in which we're speaking here, the nation-state system itself, not only that, but civilization and humanity is at stake. Because the point has been reached where we're in this clash between any continued allowing of the imperial forces, best called the British Empire, allowing them to continue with what they are doing, the devastation, the commitment to depopulation and stupidity, and a control of the world, and the menace that they are exerting of the threat of thermonuclear war from their actions perpetrated in certain parts of the world, the use of the White House and the executive in the United States to push that NATO should be deploying missile systems in Eastern Europe threatening Russia and so forth. Any continuation of that is a threat of extinction, a threat of world thermonuclear war or extinction in other ways. But otherwise before us is the opportunity for a radical shift away from all this, a radical break. We're working hard. Those of you listening in the United States know that we have tasks before us, those of you who regularly listen, to create the conditions to get Obama out of the White House. He's acting as a toady of these London destructive policies. And we need to deal with the immediate financial breakdown crisis, which otherwise is hopeless chaos, by reinstating what had worked for so long, the Glass-Steagall Act. And there's progress on that. I don't want to get into it right now, but I'll interpose a report on it. But there is a whole breakout of support for this for many reasons, but there are additional signatories on H.R. 1489 in the House. There are endorsements. There are people running for office, like the woman Elizabeth Warren running for Senate in Massachusetts, who has led a petition drive for this. But in any case, what we have to do, that's like a tourniquet, is deal with an emergency measure of restoring issuance of credit in the American system tradition and starting on an emergency basis physical gear up for the North American water and power lines here on our continent. And this is an important breakout for the entire world. Now, as I say, we'll get into that, but the North Atlantic situation is in extremis in the way of breakdown and in policy crisis. 50 miles from our studio in which I'm speaking, There is the gathering of the group of eight nations. President Obama is there, and the European office holders from France, Germany, Italy, everywhere else. But also Prime Minister Medvedev from Russia, who has called the question on the fact that this madness should be stopped by London, and Obama insisted on this forward placement to threaten Russia of missile systems. And he did that, when I say Prime Minister Medvedev, he did that before he came here. He was speaking in Russia, and he had said that what happened is that the national sovereignty of nations being violated, the threat to Russia from this emplacement of missiles, but in particular, the going from nation to nation, Libya, Syria in particular, Iran, this could lead to nuclear war. Now, a press release with the quotations, I won't read them here, is available as an organizing leaflet on LaRouchePack.com. We have it on LaRouchePub.com, where you find Executive Intelligence Review online. And in the last 24 hours, this has been distributed in Washington, D.C. It's going around the world to make sure there's no blackout of this. And I just reiterate that it was about 10 days ago that President Putin in Russia said he wasn't going to be coming yesterday or today to Camp David in Maryland for the meeting with the Group of Eight, which was a dramatic announcement that in effect was saying we're not going to be playing these games. And the games are over. That is finished. And so what we have, as I said, this is a breakout opportunity where we all, people listening, institutions, there's certain military, diplomatic, others, there's even signs of life in Congress. We have to act now. We don't have unlimited time. But the question is to reassert the principles behind the founding, well, in the United States, we're talking about the legacy and the founding of the Constitution, the founding of this nation against the British East India Company and against the idea of empire. And we have, what we're doing is reassertion of the principle behind this, the nation state. And with that, I just want to have reiterated that so people know the great opportunity we have. Let's go to Buenos Aires to either Natalie or Emiliano, because that is what we're seeing in certain key initiatives of Argentina in the South Atlantic that, in fact, are of worldwide significance. Go ahead, please.
Right. Well, Argentina can be seen as an example as how to represent the defense of national sovereignty. And I'd like to report on an event that occurred 2 days ago, which is a good example of this, because part of imperial policy that's being waged on the world right now is the promotion of green policy, of green energy, of environmental policy that is explicitly designed to reduce the world's population. And the extent that we have a chance for survival is going to be represented by nations rejecting green energy and green economics, which is a complete fraud. So what happened a couple days ago is that there was an event for a youth group, a Youth for a Sustainable Environment, towards Rio Plus 20. So this was an event preparing for the Rio Plus 20 conference, the UN Conference on Sustainable Development, that will be the 20-year anniversary event at the end of June this year. And what was clearly expressed at that event was that Argentina's position is absolutely not. We will not allow a green economy, no to the green economy. There were several government officials that spoke there. You had the subsecretary for infrastructure and environmental policy who spoke and said, you have to remember that when the initial conference, the 1992 UN Conference on Sustainable Development, was held, all of the countries in Latin America were under the rule of neoliberal policy, and they had to swallow this green policy. They didn't have a choice. The people were not concerned with human beings. They were not concerned with social issues. They were concerned with money. And it's time to overturn this policy. So Argentina's position will be no to the green economy. You had also the Secretary for Coordination, for the Chief of Staff, spoke, and he said that people need to get rid of this idea of environmentalism just being protecting the flora, the fauna, the oily penguins. we need to break the paradigm, because environmentalism, yes, we need to protect the people. We need to protect the environment, but people are in the middle of the environment, and environmental policy should be based on people and its rights. So this is actually quite a profound development, which will be expressed, and I'm sure we'll see some repercussions to this after the conference itself in June.
Well, that's great news. And also, the group of 20 are coming up. That has its own politics. But the fact of your saying government ministerial level spokesman made this so clear has very optimistic potential. I can throw in here, I go back to the period when 1992 took place, but I'm even going to predate that. There's Rio plus 40. It was 1972 in Stockholm in Sweden when it was probably one of the first world environmental conferences took place. It came 2 years after the first Earth Day, and it was just part of a world alignment attempted by the British Empire type of the propaganda machine, the financial interests, the inter-alpha chosen elite banks that had come about in 1971 to just create the fraud, as you called it, Natalie, that nature is that which exists out there outside of mankind. So that was 1972, and they worked for 20 years. There were a number of books released. There were to say that man pollutes, anything he does or she does pollutes, and that industry destroys and high-tech agriculture is destructive, etc. So then by the time you got to 1992, it was a very rotten platform for continuing this kind of thing that then, you know, got intense in the last 20 years, saying that we're supposed to even be against elements of the periodic table, like carbon, which is insane. So I'm just saying, I can't remember some of the exact protocol of 1992, but by then it was really bad. And this is a terrific reassertion of what science and nation states are really about that you're just describing. Was this in Buenos Aires? Were you there?
It was in Buenos Aires, yes.
Uh-huh. So,
well,
go ahead.
You brought up the G20. I just wanted to use that as a segue to bring up another example of the defense of national sovereignty. Argentina's renationalization of the historic petroleum company YPF, which was actually the first state-directed petroleum company in the world, founded in 1922.
Mm-hmm.
The renationalization last month on the 16th of April, that was when it was announced, that generated complete hysteria, and there was a response from Europe. The European Parliament called for sanctions on Argentina. Spain threatened Argentina. The British Foreign Secretary said that this is very disconcerting and that there will be retaliations. And the Spanish Secretary of State for Trade called for this to be challenged at the G20. He said the G20 is a forum that promotes free trade, and this is a protectionist decision, and this breaks the rules of the free market, and it breaks the pillars of the G20, and we cannot allow this. Now, the response to that was not actually a allowance of this, but the response was that you had the BRICS nations instead call for support of Argentina, and they drafted a statement to say that that Argentina should be defended because open commerce is not what actually generates economic progress. There are other policies. And so far, we haven't seen any real further threats towards Argentina because people know that the free trade system is bankrupt. This is not attacking the free trade system is not a bad thing to do these days. And there was actually an article that was very revealing by a professor of imperial history at King's College London, who said that the reason that we're seeing this disproportionately large attack on Argentina for the renationalization of YPF is not because it's not about the oil, it's not about the profits, mm-hmm. but it's about the fact that Argentina has interrupted a chain of securitization that is anchored by the oil on the one end, but then all of the holders of the derivative liabilities at the other, in London and New York. And so it's the attitude, but it's the actual breaking of this chain of securitization that's causing hysteria.
Right. And by the way, let me just, on the privatizations, you may also add that that renationalization, that is, taking back assets that were in this heyday of imposed privatization by foreign nations. There are many other things. Could you just fill some of them in? I didn't appreciate about the postal service and other key functions of a nation.
Yes, you know, now we have, this is the second term of the Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner government. Before of that, we had the first, term that was run by Néstor Kirchner before, since 2003. Mm-hmm. So after all these years, we have seen or enjoyed a lot of breakthroughs in the economy and in the political system. That I wanted to mention, for example, I mean, in the 1990s, many companies were privatized, and the Kirchner government recovered, I mean, put on the hands of state, of the state again. For example, the postal service, the national postal service. What would be there, the USPS system? Mm-hmm. Well, that same system here was taken back. Then the main airline, which is it used to cover the whole nation, and it was being destroyed also by companies similar like Repsol, and was also emptying the company from the inside. So it was recovered from private hands, and now it's national again, and it has been rebuilt. I mean, they're buying new airplanes from Brazil and stuff like that. So they are, putting the company in shape. And besides YPF, which is the last advance on this area, the pension funds that were also, I mean, maybe this is the one that had the biggest effect. Because we have been fighting all over the world, they have been getting the pension fund system they have been taking it from the state hands to put it on the stock market. So they recover that and they put it in the same process of growth. So it's has been all these series of measures that have been built a country that can. You know, can have a future now. So there might be other things that I'm not remembering now, but I wanted to put back on the mind of people that have been a series of policies that are reversing the whole neoliberal paradigm. We have been discussing this a lot, that it's not just building from now on, but actually going for historical victories. Things or companies or measures that have a lot of historical meaning for the population, and that's something really important, because that's what has been building a popular support for the program, and the popular support means the identification with that principle of sovereignty. So that's a chain reaction, because now people are thinking more, and people actually recover the right of being a nation. And that's maybe the most dangerous process for the empire, is when a population frees itself from the mental chains, where, you know, things are impossible, things are forbidden, this you can do, this is against the rules. And the idea now, I think, it should be clear for people, is that sense of liberty, that we can define our own destiny. So that's what you can feel and hear in the population. The level of discussion you can have with people is actually wider. There is, of course, a lot of insanity and irrationality, since the empire is fighting back a lot against the Argentinian government right now. So of course they are brainwashing the mind of a lot of people in the population too. Because all these changes are producing certain stress in the economy. People who has been involved in the importing economy, where we stop, you know, having industries, and they get in importing everything for Argentina. Now that's been stopped, because there is a very heavy protectionism system for developing national industries. So the free traders, that of course we have a lot of free traders too in the economy, mm-hmm. here, are screaming. It's a process that is. The fun part is that the character of the government now is, every time the imperial system tries to repeal a measure or makes an attack, the response is a bigger attack against the liberal system of economy, against monetarism, and that's a good thing.
In that light, Emiliano, maybe you want to say something here about the one critical reassertion was regarding energy, to resume the nuclear program, mm-hmm. that had been forcibly left off during this neoliberal period you're discussing, even though Argentina at the beginning was going nuclear after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have the National Agency for Nuclear Energy. It was established in 1950 by the government of Juan Perón. And we have right now, I mean, let's say 5 years ago, we were having just 2 nuclear reactors, which is a lot for a country in South America. And they were start being built in 1974, for example. And there was, there were 2 only operational, and there was a third one, which is Atucha 2, that was being built from the 1980s on. And then after the new economy, they just stopped it, and it was not canceled, but abandoned. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing, that, you know, the nuclear energy was put back in the top priority for development, but also that there was a lot of investment to recover that nuclear reactor that was in the middle of construction, because that meant, another historical victory, which is sometimes very crucial for development of a culture of sovereignty, I'm going to mention all the time, gave Argentina this third nuclear reactor, but maybe the more historical one, which is the one that was trying to be take out of the nation. But that was defended by the workers, by the scientists for decades, and finally it was finished. It's not, now it's operational. And it was a big party, an event. I mean, in the inauguration of that reactor, and in the same time, Cristina Kirchner demanded the construction of a fourth nuclear reactor. At the same time that they are developing a fourth generation nuclear reactor, which is called CAREM. It's a nuclear reactor that has been designed for decades, but was in a very slow motion, and now they went on with all the funding necessary to make the first prototype, and that's a modular reactor that can be built by many quantities. So they're going to build it they're going to have it ready for 2016. And I think that will have, in the scientific area, in the industry sector, maybe that's the most revolutionary development, to have the development of Argentinian technological development on nuclear reactor. It's a modular reactor. It's, you know, fourth generation, the safest that we can find in the world, and that's close to be finished.
It's also very clear in that light the policy of this government for the development of science and technology. That has been consistently clear throughout Cristina Kirchner's administration. She had an event at the Max Planck Institute headquarters for South America, which is here in Buenos Aires. It was a bioscience conference, and she said that the development of science and technology is a policy of state which is never to be abandoned but deepened in all respects. And that really typifies the attitude of the government towards the progress of the nation, because there are various fronts in science and in the development of infrastructure and agriculture that the government's pushing. Right now there's a policy to double food production in 8 years, which will be able to feed 10% of the world's population. That's the capability that Argentina has with the type of land. There's 33 million hectares that can be used to cultivate food. You have 100 million tons of grain right now. If that were all used to feed people, you could feed 400 million people with that amount of grain. There's quite a capability to cultivate grain and food here. So that typifies the government's attitude towards progress.
Right, and I think a year ago, someone, maybe it was a colleague of yours, but there was a science museum, the famous, world-famous new institution opened. I understand there's a television station. What I'm saying is, when you say this is government, this commitment is the government policy, there's an effort to make it popular. I mean in the highest sense of the population, not opinion. How's that going?
What they did, if that's what you're mentioning, is Technopolis, which is a big, like a small city.
Yes, that's what... Yeah.
Where, you know, it's exposed to people the meaning of every scientific achievement, the meaning of the scientific activity for the future of the nation. So they have been putting everything available, even historical developments that like reactor airplanes in the Perón's government time, which in this sense works in the whole in the idea of making people understand that they have to defend and fight and never allow that to be taken out again. It was called Technopolis. It has been open for the whole year now. Now they are waiting to open it now this year. But there is there has been a massive assistance in the people. People has approved that a lot and really defended it. Besides that, there is another kind of more, because that's an area where, a little bit outside of the city, but inside Buenos Aires itself, there is another center of activity. They are trying to put all the scientists together to make it, to avoid these atomization or putting a scientist alone and trying to make a community of scientists. And as you said, this important thing about making a scientific culture in the population and not making this division that some people develop science and the rest of the population only works. And that's why they made this TV channel to bring questions, to bring developments, to bring breakthroughs, So the population enjoys and participates in, with the mind on those kind of challenges.
What really proves this policy is that you have scientists returning to Argentina now that had to leave in the 90s under privatization. Under the neoliberal policies, there were no opportunities in the country for scientists, so you had a mass exodus of your high-skilled labor. Since 2003, you've had 890 scientists repatriated, and they're expecting to have that number reach 1,000 by the end of the year. What's more telling is that 40% of those scientists that have been repatriated are coming from the United States. So the United States needs to reinstate their own historically important role in the scientific world to be able to attract scientists.
Yes, that's also part of, I mentioned the task of North American Water and Power Alliance. It must be on the agenda for that. That's what it really means about a jobs program. It's a science commitment.
Mm-hmm.
So you're quite right. We have a lot to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the same area of science, we have also the space technology being developed.
Oh, yeah?
That's another area that was developed in the 1940s and 50s, and actually they managed to somehow survive and actually be alive for this moment of history. So that's also an area really, really well funded that it has, we can say, all the funds necessary. Now, I mean, that's the ideal of the economy, that the only limit is the people. It's our own mind. But funding shouldn't be a limit. I mean, there should be the credit necessary, credit for any kind of development that we can do. So these areas of the nuclear sector and the space sector, it's not that it's employing everybody available. It's actually needing more people. They're trying to bring more scientists to work in that area. And it has put back on the agenda the development of vectors for launching satellites, rockets, mm-hmm. and also satellites itself, like the last the Aquarius satellite that was launched by NASA. And it's now operational for, accounting for the salinity of the ocean waters that creates a lot of new capabilities for looking at the environment, mm-hmm. in a scientific way. And the center for the center for receiving the information from the satellite is in Córdoba, in Buenos Aires. And that's something that has really amazed us, the scientific policy about putting all the information available for all the population. Because sometimes we have this, in the Soviet Union, you have a lot of scientific development, but that was being kept closed in a closed environment, and the population is not affected by the developments of science, even not by the economy, as it happened there. But the view is completely open. We will do all this research, all these investigations, all the information we'll get, it will be available for any young student. The same quantity and quality as any professional scientist, the population will, the information will be open. And that's in the same track, as you said, to develop a scientific culture, a culture that participates, enjoys, and it's identified on the scientific attitude in front of the universe. I think that characteristic of the kind of programs, besides the achievement itself, is what they want to do science for. Is it for a special purpose, close it there, or maybe selling it to making money, or actually to for the enrichment of the culture? And I think that's another great, maybe more subjective issue, but maybe that's have a bigger effect than the achievement itself.
Emiliano, we have an email that came in, mm-hmm. From Louisiana, from the lower Mississippi basin, but it's from Louisiana, from someone, Natalie, you may know, Fred Unifeld in Louisiana. But he just asked about education and public schools in Argentina, which is right in line with what you were saying. He points out that there is this movement in the U.S. for charter schools. There's actually destructuring of education, even at its low level in this country. But would you say something about the public school system?
Well, it's funding. They established the highest funding in relation with the, you know, PBI, as they call it, GDP, right? I don't remember now the amounts, but it's really well funded.
So it's a priority in the budget.
Yeah, it's a priority.
It just actually doubled it from 2% to 5%.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about the public school system, not some. The last thing is to go to some disparate privatized.
No, public school and many new universities.
Okay.
That's amazing. Public universities, national universities being built from one year to another. In different. I mean, when I drive, I see, you know, this strange building, and then I find the sign. It's a new university of this area, you know. So they are opening the educational system. I mean, rebuilding it, funding for you know, teachers and the whole structure, and building new ones with a different program. That's very interesting because even like the science minister said, that two places that are really hard to change are cemeteries and universities, because the people inside doesn't cooperate to change, you know, to make a revolution.
Yeah.
So we know, also the fight for scientific freedom, we can say, or for real science. We know, of course, that there is a lot of corruption in the academic system.
Yeah.
So that fight is also being given because, of course, there is the programs were designed by, you know, the Bertrand Russell circles all over the world. So that area is also reacting on that. So I think the idea of building new universities with a new program, there is no more discussion about with these certain academic circles, so we can start again with another view of history and another view of science and culture, and that makes a double effect, more opportunities for studying and a brand new opportunity, which is for really studying and not just following the rules of the Russellite era.
That's great. Let me just ask one thing here, because people appreciate that Argentina is large. You're the second largest landmass nation in South America, surely.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, in line with your point about universities, prompts me to ask, is there some particular geographic infrastructural commitment, Patagonia, or even the Antarctic, or somewhere in the north, or the river systems, that any of this scientific and technology and education effort is geared towards?
Well, the biggest effect we have it in the agricultural development, which is, as Natalie mentioned, biotechnology. There is a lot of scientific development in the agricultural area. The industry also follows that. And that's Argentina still has this colonial system of urbanization, which is everything is concentrated in Buenos Aires. We have a couple of two or three big cities in the inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different than the U.S. We still have a historical debt with the north part of Argentina, close to Paraguay, Bolivia. That's the most poor areas and undeveloped. You know, the south of Argentina, Patagonia, it's full of. There is a lot of oil developments. We still lack this development of agriculture. But right now, China is investing, the state of China is investing on mining and developing agricultural explosion in one province, in the north of Patagonia.
Uh-huh.
What's
the name of the province, if you don't mind?
Rio Negro.
Uh-huh, Rio Negro.
Yes, this is in the same province where we have the IMBAP system, the company that developed the satellites. For Argentina.
Uh-huh.
So the point is that there is nothing there, absolutely nothing. And I think that helps to break the paradigm,
mm-hmm.
that we well, the agriculture, it's only developed in green areas that already look green. But in this place, the only thing we lack is water, and infrastructure, because the whole area, we have no deserts. We have mostly, you know, places we just are fertile but need an AWPA system.
Yeah, savanna.
So that's one of the things that, I mean, we can count it here as a political intention. It was not achieved, but I think it was not achieved in the moment. Is the intention to build a crossing the nation with a high speed train. That was going to be built by the TGV. TGV model of train, of high speed train, which was going to be the fastest train in the whole American continent, from Alaska to Tierra del Fuego. But that was, stopped. There was certain, stupid discussions that's not really understood yet, the sense of physical economy and how that, because the monetarist view was put on the agenda to discuss that was very expensive. And that it will be cheaper to fix the old trains. Mm-hmm. Since it was a French company that was going to build it, there was French financing. And since we have the European crisis in 2008, we know it's a permanent crisis, but in 2008 it created a lot of problems for them. So the financing was canceled and the project, is still there. But we can put it as a view of an intention for development, transportation, going for the newest technology, and not just fixing something that it has been done anyway to fix and to put in shape the old network that was destroyed again in the 1990s with the neoliberal policies. Mm-hmm. But we are waiting. We need to launch that program again, that project.
Right. It certainly goes hand in hand with going to space. Looked at the right way. Yeah. Well, please add anything else, but otherwise I definitely want you to say in the final segment here to speak about the enemy, that we're committed to make history. You know, that is...
Well, yeah, one of the things I want to, if you ask me to add this one, only one more thing, is that at the beginning of... right now, Cristina Kirchner is now she's doing her second term.
Right.
And she won the elections in October 2011, just last year, at the end of last year. She got 54% of the votes because of these policies. And people should try to, you know, to understand and trust and hope that doing the right thing, the population will move on that. And you can have, you know, a solid political process. But the point is that we're talking about the enemy. Since the empire is feeling absolutely impotent about this process, because now, you know, the people is getting together supporting this project, they counterattack the victory of Cristina Kirchner with a run on the financial system. They launch a massive withdrawal of dollars out of Argentina to foreign banks, trying to bring down the government, to break the government. The response was, as they could do, you know, a regulation of capital flows that anyway couldn't stop like $18 billion from leaving the country, which for Argentina it's a lot of funds, but they finally stopped it. Now there is a very heavy regulation on capital flows. That means dollars. Of course, the monetaries are complaining because the black market money cannot be taken out. Only, you know, official well-earned money can only
can
be
move, right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but speculation and even you can think about drug trafficking and stuff like that. It's a heavy problem because they cannot move the money with the freedom. So we are seeing that, you know, as the industrial protectionism and regulation on capital flows, it's an emergency. It was necessary for keeping the economy in shape, but actually brings a sovereign view of the future into one of the most critical areas, which is on the monetary system. But yes, what we are, the thing that we would like to, well, we couldn't speak about Malvinas too much, but well, because there is a lot of discussion on that, the idea of being, when the population is feels defeated, where the population feels understands maybe that the enemy it's destroying the future, but they can see a coming victory, or they can see the capacity, the political capacity to break with that.
Uh-huh.
And I think that because we have, I mean, the great the principal ideas, the principal programs are being presented to the population, and I think the task is to cut, you know, the defeated view of the fight, and understanding, for example, when Nestor Kirchner got in government,
that was 2003.
Mm-hmm. No one of us, I mean, we were supporting it. We were supporting the fight against the IMF, which was very strong, but we had no idea that the government would go for so many breakthroughs on the economy and on history, mm-hmm. on fixing the big mistakes and lies about history, and actually redoing everything and putting back on the main place where they should be, the real patriots of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's maybe the understanding of the capacity of winning, right? That's what we are being trying to see, how can the experience we have in Argentina, which is a small country, sometimes what the achievement itself, as I mentioned before, it doesn't look big, but actually transformation of the population and the significance of each political measure. And if you apply that to the U.S., it would be a revolution for the world because of the power and the size.
Yeah, I just wanted to open up the topic of the Malvinas, because this is really the most explicit expression of the fight for national sovereignty. And it hits at this fight between a republic and an empire, the historical fight. Because the issue is not a simple issue of reclaiming islands that were historically part of Argentina and that were then stolen by the British at a time when the United States should have defended Argentina under the Monroe Doctrine, but the United States was weakened because Andrew Jackson was in the presidency, so was not representing the interests of the United States. This is not just an issue of recuperating the territory. It's an issue of the defense of the entire South Atlantic, and the fact that the British are now militarizing the South Atlantic. You have the islands themselves are not some place, peaceful place with a native population that just herds sheep and fishes and cultivates squid. It's a military base. It's the most highly militarized place in the world in terms of the density of military personnel compared to population. The so-called native population is a small minority. Most of the population are either military, well, half of the population is military personnel. There's also a lot of Europeans there who are on a temporary, they live there temporarily, they have businesses. But if you look, and the Argentine Foreign Minister Hector Zimmerman has exposed this very clearly in various forums and in front of the United Nations, and the United Nations supports the call for dialogue and has actually called on Great Britain to come to the negotiations table multiple times. There's dozens of resolutions that call for Britain to negotiate about this. But they're not going to negotiate about it, or they're not going to, on their own terms, negotiate about it, because the issue is not the sovereignty of the islands. The issue is the empire. The issue is the fact that with those islands, they have dominion of the entire South Atlantic, because it's not just the Malvinas, there's also the South Georgia and the South Sandwich Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at access to the entirety of Antarctica, which they're trying to claim Argentina and Chile's portion of Antarctica. And then they're looking at access to the Pacific through the Tierra del Fuego and through the Strait there. They would have access to the Pacific. They would have access to the Indian Ocean. And so you're looking at a very large area of geopolitical control that the British Empire, which the Argentine government is not afraid to use that term, the British Empire, is not willing to give up.
Right, and the coastal, Africa, Southern Africa figures in this British evil intent, the empire intent, and so forth. I mean, that's part of what they've been doing all along.
Right, something just to note, the president of Argentina was in Angola a couple of days ago, signing some commerce agreements, and she made the point and received the support as well from the Angolan government that that they support Argentina's claim to the Malvinas, because the issue is the defense of the South Atlantic. The issue is, how do we have a community of republics that fight for the development of mankind as a whole, and get out of this archaic fight of colonialism. We should be grown up by now. Empires are a very infantile expression of a low level of humanity.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, low life. That's putting it politely, isn't it?
And this is, in the way that the British have responded to the repeated calls for negotiations is that they sent their most powerful destroyer, the HMS Dauntless, to the islands. This is this thing has nuclear capability. You're looking at a military hardware buildup that is comparable to the Persian Gulf, to what is being arranged in the Persian Gulf. This is not a simple ship.
Installed by BAE Systems, the same Aoyama company.
Oh, I see. Let's just in case people didn't hear, you're talking about the infamous BAE Systems, the kind of imperial dirty tricks hardware system that connected to Saudi British dirty money too, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And they're involved in the Malvinas, you're saying?
Yes, maybe they send it for shipping. And they have maybe nuclear weapons that they're gonna ship with that. The point that Natalie is presenting is that a really militarized area it's very grotesque. The relation between population and the military expansion in the process in the area.
Right. Let me ask at large in the final minutes, because there are many things we didn't even discuss yet, but is there anything you want to say historically about any point of principle or just piece of information about a key part? Because you were saying that truth in history is being restored in Argentina. Do you want to say anything about that regarding some critical part of that story?
Well,
I'm thinking of the empire, but I...
Yeah, mostly making, avoiding a partisan view of the system, the political system, and actually recovering patriots who did something for the nation, and how those patriots, you find them in different areas, in different sectors and parties. But the effect on the general welfare of the population, that's what's been measured. So we are now, that's freaking out. The political circles and even the empire, because the government is picking up patriots from maybe what you could call opposition. Different parties.
Uh-huh.
So it's not being making a closed group that we, you know, just promote our own leaders, but actually anybody who has been crucial for the development of the nation. I think that's another very important cultural process that is making a stronger mobilization. But no, when every time something is developed, like for example the renationalization of YPF, that brings back the knowledge of how it did it happen, who created this company. So, you know, people have to start studying back what was done by Enrique Mosconi, which is the person that in the 1920s developed the that company. So everything is put on the historical view, and that's enriching the view of the population. As a, this is the point, a long historical process for the many years for coming, and that's what Cristina Kirchner said in the last big rally she did in a soccer stadium that was full of people, that the young people must be the ones who will go with it for the future and have to keep these policies in the nation, because there is no one of us is here forever. You know, the government will change, but you, the young people, should preserve and keep this fight and the new challenges that will be confronted in the future coming. So I think there is a very big, not transformation, but very fast replacement from all politicians, all officials, with young people. The level, I think the ratio of young people in government right now might be the highest in the world, sure about that. Because every time you see a picture or you go to a building, I don't know, it's in the highest levels. It, you know, people with 30 something years old. And there is some kind of, you know, cooperation between the, you know, the, not the old generation, but a little the older generation. But there is a accelerated, pace of replacement with new people that has not been part or worked in you know, this dark process of neoliberalism. That I think we will be very important to mention what we are seeing now in 18 years old young people, because they now they are coming up in society with political questions, and everything they live through is a process of, you know, the Kirchner government. So they don't have these ghosts and fears, you know, of the military dictatorship. They don't even have the ghosts and fears of neoliberalism. They just think that everything is possible and we can do it. So it's really amazing, because sometimes we are so used to discuss, you know, these economic and political things that, you know, people usually have problems to understand that we can do it, but this new generation, they just say yes, we should do that and more and one more, and they are very demanding about more achievements. So now we have to keep pace with that and you know, not and understand there is a bigger victory coming, because the reaction of the population is asking for more and being very sure that it can be possible.
Sorry, there. I broke a connection temporarily. Okay. But in fact, that brings me around to that headline that we started with an hour ago, mm-hmm. where you said that various government officials and others on the podium spoke to this youth for sustainable environment, saying we have to put humanity back centrally. Because I was going to ask you, who all was there? Is that it? Must be in line with what you just said.
It was a youth group that held the event. So the group was Youth for a Sustainable Environment, which we were discussing this very thing before the call, that it's impressive that you have, you know, in most countries where environmentalism is popular, this is something that is sold to the youth, that it's trendy, it's popular to be pro-green, to be in with these environmental policies. But here the difference in what is telling for the future is that you have the youth are pushing these very same same policies about the future of the development of the country?
Well, by organized by the ministry itself of planification of the economy. But there was invitations for different leaders of political groups. So they were going to discuss environmental policy. But the end up of the discussion is, okay, yeah, we discuss environmental policy and the green economy is a fraud. So we will participate, that's what we were talking, in the environmental discussion with this view. It's not that we're going to say it in a different, you know, discussion about nuclear development, and there we speak about the problem of the fraud of green
right.
policies. No, they're going to discuss it in the environmental policies, and they will go to Rio in June 20
yes.
To bring this bomb. we have a few days, many, many days to intervene.
Yes.
La Rochista for sure will be very active now on this issue to expose the frauds that they understood and the much more things that we know, and they will be more stronger, I think, in their view they could develop.
Well, that took us beyond the hour, and I'm glad it did. That's terrific news, and we can regard it as a call to action, not anything to coast on. But
yes.
This is terrific, and I'll just mention to our listeners, this will be the LaRouche Show closing out, but May 26, I think we have our candidate from the national leadership slate in the United States, Keisha Rogers from Texas, that will be a guest. Harley Schlanger will interview her. That's May 26. But I want to thank you very much from Buenos Aires, Emiliano Andino and Natalie Lofgren. And after or during or around that time, I'd like somebody to be one or both or more of you to be back on again on this. We can. Mm-hmm. I hope we'll celebrate tremendous impact of this.
Thank you for the opportunity to communicate this, and that's what I'm hoping, that if we did all this, the U.S. can do this and more. It's just taking Obama out of there.
That's right. And that's what we'll do. Thanks again. And
okay, thank you.
Signing off May 19th, 2012. Thank you.